Here's the host of Rush to Reason, John Rush.
All right, hour number three is upon us. Myself, Rachel Keene, conservative mama. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush. Charlie Grimes, your engineer. Matt Johnston is joining us now. Matt, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks.
I appreciate you joining us. So you are the CEO and founder at Guide Social. That's a social video ad agency, and you guys work with very innovative e-commerce stores around the U.S., and you're the author of Producing Empathy, the Secret Method I Use to Get 100 Million Views on Videos Online. Now, all that being said, talk to us about Facebook and the banning of certain individuals.
So I'm going to launch into Facebook and banning of it. I mean, what do you want to know?
Well, I mean, I guess when does it come to a user near you, I guess, is really the ultimate question, and or the business near you?
I see. So when does big tech end up having larger implications on that kind
yes,
of stuff?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, listen, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to not necessarily what is even said on these accounts, but it comes down to what people will do with it. I mean, that's what I've been following with my whole career, is how people will take what they see online and turn that into content. And that's when it really turns into virality. And then the question is, when you get into something that is viral within certain groups of people, at what point does it need some sort of control there, and who gets to make that decision? And at the end of the day, one person's opinion is different than another person's opinion, and it does big tech equal the same thing as big government if they're in your pockets all the time?
Right.
It's hard to
Great question. No, you know, I think that's a valid point. Yeah, and what are your thoughts? I mean, I have mine, Matt. I've shared those many times on the program. I really feel like, you know, a couple of things need to happen with, I'll use Facebook as an example. They either need to start towing the line on what really a platform is, because right now they are, I feel very much so that they're an editor, not a platform. Either they need to become an editor, or they need to stay an editor and then have different rules that are outside of the 230, or they need to go back to being strictly a platform. Mm-hmm. In fact, that even means get rid of fact checkers and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
and the reality
is,
if you're just a platform and somebody puts some erroneous information out there, then so be it. Somebody else has to figure out what it is or isn't.
Right.
Well, this is where you ultimately run into the big problems, right?
Right.
Because it's a business. So at the end of the day, if you just go back to becoming a platform, and I'm sure if you ask Mark Zuckerberg what it is, he would say that it's a platform. But the thing is, I mean, if you went to just going back to that platform doesn't exist if that platform doesn't make money. It's just capitalism. And so they need advertisers to do that.
Right.
And in order for advertisers to want to buy that ad space, just like they're worried about what areas they buy billboards in and how that will look from a PR standpoint and from a bottom line standpoint, then their business model starts to erode. And then you start to say, okay, well, they can't do that, so then why don't we just, should all these platforms be nonprofits or something, so that we don't have to, so that nobody's making the decisions about them. And then you just end up in this weird place where it's kind of like, well, we don't want them to act like a business, but we still want them to exist. And they can only exist if they have their business model. You just run into a problem.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, for me personally, I'll be real honest. I grew up without them. I live forever without them. I don't frankly care whether they exist or not. They do, but if they do exist, I want them to abide by the laws and rules that have been set up that protect a platform from being sued for the things that normally a newspaper would be sued for, that's editing information coming out, which, by the way, the playing field right now, I guess what I'm saying, Matt, is not level. What one person that's a publisher cannot get by with, Facebook can, and I don't think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what it comes down to is that Facebook is both an editor and a publisher. So,
that's right.
My whole background before I started this company and an ad agency was in journalism. Mm-hmm. And Facebook was the platform. Now, that being said, could I start my own journalism organization tomorrow and then start posting it on Facebook and do whatever I want with it? Yeah, of course. and then it would get platform, and then it would get the platform would do what it wanted with it. And then again, it's not Facebook that's boosting these things; it's other humans.
True.
I mean, at the end of the day, Facebook is a it's a social network, because just like I said at the beginning, you have to think about how these things will travel, not just the fact that they exist. And
right.
that's what leads to the larger ramifications. So at the end of the day, it really comes down to you as someone who publishes things, because at the end of the day, it's not too much different than having a website that you publish something on, and then your own ethics. And then, oh no, my ethics are different than that person's ethics. That person doesn't like my ethics. So do I get to edit that person's ethics? Can they edit my ethics? Can they silence me? Can I silence them? At the end of the day, you're sort of like, okay, well, nobody can silence anybody, right? That's the only thing that makes sense.
Right.
And then people get hurt, and then you're like, okay, now what do we do? I guess we have to start making sure that people don't get hurt. I mean, if we have a platform where information can go viral and we have no control over it, do we let that happen no matter what? I don't know that there's a really good answer to that.
Well, I mean, the ultimate answer to all of this, and I've said this for years now, and the problem is it doesn't exist and it hasn't happened yet, and I don't know if it ever will. Matt, really, the answer to this is called competition. Competition actually breeds excellent and really levels the playing field in a lot of areas. You know this from the journalistic end of things, and even what you're doing today. You understand that better than probably anyone. Problem is, there's no competition there.
Right.
I mean, certainly there is competition. I mean, Facebook's app installs declined 30% in the most recent report because TikTok is getting so freaking popular.
Okay.
I mean, there certainly is competition out there in the marketplace as far as social media platforms, for sure. And of course, Trump is now trying to compete with it by going one-to-one. And, to be honest with you, I mean, if you really want me to read the tea leaves and see through all of these debates, that's the future of where social media is going anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Privacy is becoming more important than ever. Apple is banning tracking across everywhere.
Yes.
And so really what Donald Trump is creating with his new network is really what the future is. It's one-to-one, really. I mean, it's much more about, hey, I opt in to be a part of this.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right.
I see a news feed and a bunch of stuff happens.
I agree with that. Now, going back to what you do for businesses and so on, how does it affect that end of things when you're a business trying to advertise to certain individuals? Does that make things better for a business or worse?
Oh, no. I mean, it's... This move, this shift is tremendously damaging to the digital advertising agency. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
Back in the day,
I agree with you.
Of course. I mean, because it's gonna just get us back to mom and pop marketing rather than, hey, I'm gonna follow you around the internet until you buy stuff.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, no, to me, it gets back that guerrilla marketing, if you would, to where people really have to think again about what they're doing, who they're targeting, and who they're going after. And actually, Matt, I'll just say it as it is. They have to work for it for a change.
Right. Yeah, certainly. And I'm on the technical side all the time. And the thing is, the tech is so good that you don't have to work for it. You don't have to work very hard for it.
That's right.
But that's not the future. And that's happening super, super fast. And we're just going to all have to get used to the idea that people are going to hear from us when they say they want to hear from us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to treat them like human beings. And when they buy from us, they're buying from a human being. Just like when you went to one laundromat on the corner instead of another one because you like the guy that ran the place.
One last question for you, Matt. And this is off the cuff. It's not in my notes. And I just thought of this as we were chatting. Do you ever see Apple getting into the, platform, social media sort of things, if you would? I mean, do you ever see them going down that path, buying a TikTok or creating their own? Do you ever see them?
They already have their own TV.
They do.
Yeah.
Do you see them getting into that arena at all?
I think that they think that they already are with Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp. They bought WhatsApp. And WhatsApp is the biggest social network outside of the United States. So they think that they're already in that space. And as you can see, just what we were talking about before, they're all in on the same idea that I'm talking about, that we were talking about, that this is going to be a, it's going to be much more about opting in and having private one-to-one chats back and forth with communities and people rather than it is, let's blast things out there and see if they can go viral to a bunch of strangers. So Facebook feels like they're already in it. And you can
I was asking is, do you see Apple entering into the social platform, you know, end of things at any point in time?
Yeah. See, I get Apple and Facebook mixed up sometimes in my head because they're just sometimes just the same. They're just gigantic tech companies. Yeah, no, Apple kind of thinks they're in it too with texting and iCloud, of course. I think that they will, but
I think so too.
The same way,
I agree. I think they will too. And by the way, and the reason why I say that, I think this last move with their iOS privacy update opens the door for them to do that.
I tell you what they're going to do. They're going to basically, they're saying, "Hey, we're going to shut down the ad business model of Facebook and Google, so that we can build our own ad network."
That's right.
And just add to the bottom line.
I agree with you 100%.
Now, is this an automatic update that occurs on? Oh, okay, so you don't have to.
Nope.
Okay.
It's the new 14.5 version, I believe, that's out. Am I saying that right, Matt? I think it's the newest version that just came out. It shut a lot of that out for Google and Facebook both.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah, you'll see the pop-ups that are happening if you update your phone.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Hey, Matt, how do folks get a hold of you or watch or track or see what you're doing?
Well, don't track me. I thought we went over that.
Ah, there you go.
you can find me at mattjohnston.com. Thanks so much for having me.
Matt, I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. Great insight. And, you know, I think he's accurate on a lot of things he's saying.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting what you said about Apple, them going, you know, into their own little social network, and then that's why they're shutting out.
Or
ads.
Trying to control more of the ad space that's out there by doing some of what they just did. They're not stupid.
No.
Not by any means. So we'll come right back. Don't go anywhere. Geno's Auto Service is next, folks. And at Geno's, they want to take care of you and your vehicle at the same time because they know that taking care of the vehicle is, in fact, taking care of you, giving you the peace of mind that your vehicle is going to go from A to B with no issues and do that for as long as possible so you ultimately save money. It's Geno's Auto Service with a J, genosautoservice.com, 303-794-6700.
Now's the time to take advantage of Geno's Napa Break Special. This month, get a $50 Napa prepaid Visa card with a qualifying Napa Brakes parts purchase of $250 or more. For over 38 years, Geno's Auto Service has been serving Littleton and customers along the Front Range. At Geno's, their team recommends checking your brakes every 5,000 miles. Stop in this week and they'll check your brakes for free. As members of Colorado Select Auto Care, the Geno's team will back up their work with Napa's nationwide peace of mind warranty. To make your life simpler, Geno's offers loaner vehicles so you can drop off your car and pick it up when ready. Geno's continues their public service work, partnering with Hands of the Carpenter and donating work on vehicles for single mothers or women in need. Check out all their Google reviews for a good snapshot of their business. They're AAA approved and located at Bowles and Platte Canyon. Stop in or visit them online at genosautoservice.com. That's Geno's with a J.
Extreme Auto Repair, it's Franktown. I get this right here. The same area, though. Same area of town, out southeast of town. Franktown Firearms, Extreme's coming up here in a minute. If you're out in the Extreme area, you can go by Franktown Firearms. Check out all the new stuff they've got when it comes to guns, ammo. A lot of training, by the way, folks. If you need anything when it comes to that, they've got you set up. Now, I will tell you, go online, check it out, register. You know, in some cases, there may be a wait time to get into a class, but it's training, training, training. They do a ton of that, and hats off to them for doing so. Find them at 720-770-7777 or klzradio.com.
Find more guns and ammo at lower prices, only at Franktown Firearms. Everyone says they value long-term relationships with their customers, but the team at Franktown Firearms back up their words with actions by keeping their prices fair and their shelves as full as possible. Because they maintain good relationships with their suppliers, the team at Franktown Firearms has developed a reputation for reliability, which allows them to keep their shelves stocked during nationwide shortages.
Because they always have new shipments coming in, they haven't had to hike up prices. So you can find guns and ammo at or below MSRP. You will go back again and again to a shooting range and gun store where you feel respected. And the team at Franktown Firearms shows respect through reasonable prices and a consistent supply of guns and ammo. Fill out their contact form at klzradio.com/Franktown for specific pricing. Franktown Firearms, where students become friends.
This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Rachel Keenix, conservative mama.
That's me.
And how do folks find you, by the way?
Conservativemama.com. You can check out that satire we ran earlier. There's a video that goes with it. I am all over social media, but heavily censored, of course. I'm on MeWe, a Telegram. I have a Telegram. So
I don't know what that is, Telegram.
It's kind of like your own little chat group.
Do I have to, Morse code, or how does that work?
No, there's no Morse code involved.
Oh, okay, just wondering.
Yeah, but you can just...
I don't know Morse code.
No, it's cool because you can say stuff there that you can't say, you know.
It's because it's in a Telegram.
No, stop it. And I'm on Rumble, too. I'm trying to grow on Rumble because...
Rumble.
You know,
Rumble's like YouTube.
Rumble's like YouTube, got yeah. It. So
Telegraph?
Telegram.
Or Telegram.
Telegram, conservative mama.
So Telegram is an app, or what
is it? It is an app. It's an app. You can download it. You can have your own channel. Like, you probably want that for Rush to Reason. You can
have your own channel.
You can have your own channel, and then you can have a chat room where people can talk about stuff. So you can make a post, and then it's like, they can really talk about, oh, like, I like what John just said there, and they can chat about it, or here's an interesting article. So they can directly send you articles or information.
So it's like widespread texting?
Yeah. Yes.
Like group text? I hate
kind
group
of.
Text.
Kind of. But this is the thing about my Telegram. Like, I will post just on my channel, and then I have a chat room. So I'll post something, and then when I have time, because you can get caught up with all that other, a bunch of other stuff going on, I'll have time to go, and then I'll go over into the chat room and just see what people are saying, and they'll leave information. And it's just interesting because I learn stuff, like, in my own little chat room. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Thanks for sending that. That's interesting.
Are they monitoring what's being said?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
are you sure?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, who's they?
Well, the people that start the thing.
Well, yeah, I know,
right? Telegram owner, whoever
probably,
that is.
Probably, who knows? But they're allowing you to say stuff that normally you can't say. I mean, you can't talk about so much stuff right now that's just nuts to me. I mean, that's a red flag alone to me. Like, when people are saying, hey, you can't talk about that, or don't ask those questions, just be quiet, just go with the flow. That's when I'm like, okay, now I'm even more interested. Now I'm more curious. You've piqued my curiosity here, and now I want to know what's really going on. And that's kind of what's happened to me over the last year is, And so I was really alerted when big tech started saying, hey, you can't say this, or you can't talk about this, or you can't post anything about this. Then I was like, okay, I need to go someplace that I can. And so...
Agree.
So, yeah, I think that's... That's the cool thing is that there's other things popping up. There's MeWe out there that is a little bit more free speech. Some people say that they're not as much free speech, but they've not checked me on anything, and I've posted some controversial stuff over there. So as long as,
I'm downloading
there
as we
go.
Speak.
Yeah.
So I'll get Telegram.
Yeah, and you should have a Rush to Reason little.
I guess I will.
You should have a channel, and then you can have a chat room, and then people can directly send stuff to you even during the show. They could say, hey. Like, they could chat to
so
you.
So instead of using the text line, we use
this.
Yeah. Just go to Telegram instead.
And then you can grow your Telegram.
And then everybody could be talking at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
And they could talk back and forth.
It's a great idea, actually.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I'm glad I bring you in here every on Thursdays.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've liked it.
So how did you learn about Telegram?
Well, when they kicked Trump off Twitter, then everybody's like, hey, go to Telegram. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is another thing. Like, it's just still – I mean, it's just – you only can handle so much, right?
Right. Yeah, I know. You're on overload otherwise.
Right. And so I was like, I created an account, but I didn't do anything with it. I just had it for a while. And then I started to realize that the clamping down that was happening to me even more over this last, 3 months. So I was like, I'm going to start posting stuff over there that, I'll think something, or I'll read something – or I'll hear a comment from a doctor on something and I'm like, this is really interesting information. But if I was to post this on any kind of big tech, they would come for me. They'd try to, you know, hit me again. So instead of doing that, I'm going to post over here. And it's also an opportunity to hear what other people are thinking. Like, I love the dialogue, you know, because there's there's some smart people out there. There's some smart people that, you know, support me and what I do, and they're able to kind of send me information. And so it's just kind of like it's just a little community formed. So,
well, I am going to learn about it as we speak. I will figure out how to get this thing.
Yeah.
You know me, I can figure out how to get this thing set up. It might take me a minute, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah. There's chat. Like right now, I'll go over to my chat. I've got a post there. About Cuomo, COVID-19, like stuff you can't post, mental health awareness going on, some live footage of what's happening in Israel.
That's all on there.
Yeah, like people will send stuff. And so it's kind of like they're like gathering information for me that I'm like, oh, and then I can kind of go through it. You can filter out stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, use your discernment.
Well, you know, we may actually, you know, do what you're talking about, and I'll get with Anne, and we'll figure out how to get this going.
Yeah. That way you could say you Telegram, and then you can send people.
I have no new conversations.
Well,
somebody's going to talk to me now.
Yeah.
I feel lonely.
Well, what's your link?
John Rush.
John Rush. Okay, they'll find you.
That's easy enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you have Telegram, go find John.
Go find John Rush and send me a message.
Send him a message. Yeah, send me a message, too, on Conservative Mama.
Why don't you send me one? I'll send you one.
Okay, let me. I'll follow
I don't know.
You. Okay, we'll figure it out.
Oh, somebody just sent me one.
No way.
Hey, thanks.
Oh, it's your first one.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Awesome. I just got one.
Yay.
Hey. Oh, you know what? It's one of my old clients.
Okay.
Hello. This is awesome.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's your purse. Okay. So now what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to set up a channel.
Okay.
It took me a while.
Somebody sent me a sticker.
Oh.
Well, this is cool.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they are.
Yeah.
Here we go, Charlie. I already got two. Boy. Wow. Off we go.
Yeah. So I have my own little Rachel. That's my personal. But then I was like, I'm going to create a channel. So then I created a channel, and then I created a chat.
Okay.
It's taken me a while.
Okay, so you're going to have to help me during the break do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
We'll get that set up. We'll let you know how we're going to do all this, and I guess we'll just get this thing flying along here. Here we go. All right. Extreme Auto Repair, I mentioned them a moment ago. Anything you need for your vehicle out in the Parker area, they're there for you. They want to help you with your vehicle needs. And I know I keep saying it, I sound like a broken record, but folks, I warned you several months ago about the chip shortage that was coming, what it was going to do to car prices, new and used. I'm not saying I had a crystal ball. I could just, you know, kind of see what was developing there, and it's come true. Yeah, used car prices are sky high. Used truck prices are sky high. You can't find new cars. If you do, you're going to pay over retail price. I read this morning that if you want to go buy a new Kia Telluride, which is a hot new little SUV I've driven, it's a great car, by the way.
Okay.
You cannot test drive that vehicle unless you agree to pay $18,000 over sticker price.
What? No.
I'm not joking.
What?
On the wholesale side, one of the folks that works for me wanted one, so I was pricing one of those out for him through my channels. I, even with all of my great deals, have to pay $3,000 over sticker price to get one.
No.
So, yes, that's what's going on in the new car world. Not every vehicle's that way, but a lot are. So my point is this. Keep your old car running.
Yes.
Get it going. Go to Extreme. Take care of it and keep it running. 303-841-1071 or klzradio.com is how you find them.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right. Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, so I've got the Telegram thing going. So if you have Telegram, you can search for me. Send me a message. John Rush, it's easy. I can't believe I actually got the John Rush on Telegram. I mean, somebody else wasn't faster than me. And there's a lot of John Rushes, by the way.
Yeah.
There's one famous singer guy out on the East Coast that always gets all the crap first.
John Rush on
that. He is, actually. Okay. He's called the human iPod.
Oh, what?
Yes, look him up.
Okay.
He's one of the first searches when you search my name, you know.
Yeah.
He's one of the first guys that comes up, and
well,
I'm surprised he didn't
Telegram
get.
Yet.
He's not on Telegram.
Going to grow.
So there I am. Here we go. All right, Scott Garlis joining us now from Stansberry Research. Scott, how are you today, sir?
John, I'm well. How are you, man?
We're doing great. Other than, you know, inflation finally.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't say finally. I've been saying for a while it's here. It just finally became known in the financial world. Let me say it this way. The financial experts finally realized John was right.
I still am not there with you yet.
Oh, okay.
Talk to me.
So this month and next month are the easiest month in terms of the year-over-year comparisons on inflation.
Okay.
This was the low point last year. What we saw last year was PPI, which is Producer Price Index, what it costs for manufacturers to build stuff. I want to say it was down like 2.1% off the top of my head. I don't have the number right in front of me at the moment. And then in terms of CPI, I'm sorry, it was down. Last April, PPI was down 1.5%. That was the weakest number of the year. And then from there, it started going up. So that means the comparisons are going to get a lot harder, and it's going to be harder to show growth in inflation from a producer price index standpoint from
okay.
the year. And CPI, which is Consumer Price Index, mm-hmm. which we saw yesterday, that was at its weakest point last May. That was up 0.1%, and then it shot straight up from there. So, again, you're going to see harder and harder comparisons. We've been seeing easy comparisons all throughout the beginning of this year, and now they're going to start getting a lot harder. And so when you start to see those, that's where we're really going to want to watch to see if these big inflation numbers still stay with us. Look, if the comparisons are getting harder and inflation's picking up, that's a real problem.
Mm-hmm. I still think it's coming. I don't know how you could, you and I have talked about this, how you could ingest that much liquidity into the markets, have some of the supply and demand issues we've got. I mean, right now, even I just talked about a moment ago before you came on, you know, trying to buy a new car, depending upon what you're buying, you're going to pay sticker price or above. If you didn't even find one, used car prices are probably 30% higher right now than they typically are. I realize that that's just a section of the economy and it doesn't count for everything. But in general, I mean, as a business owner, Scott, we're paying more for a lot of the things that we're buying to do the jobs we normally do.
Definitely. And some of the other factors that have gone in, like fuel costs. Fuel costs have definitely shot up.
Yes.
The Colonial Pipeline stuff on the East Coast hasn't helped. But hopefully they've gotten that figured out. They're going to get it back online. That'll start to bring costs back down a bit. But another factor, things are like their airline costs. One thing we've spoken about is that as more people have become vaccinated, suddenly everybody wants to go fly again.
Right, that's true.
Well, a lot of the airlines, they cut capacity because they had empty planes all over the place, and they laid off a lot of people because you can't staff people for planes that don't fly.
Right.
So the problem is, as all these people want to fly again, there just aren't planes there. And now, when you're an airline, the reason you cut capacity is to get pricing power back.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten pricing power back. But now they're trying to add airlines or new planes back on like crazy, and it doesn't go as quick as they want it to.
No, and I think, they've even got people that are out right now that they're trying to figure out how to get back in, or, do they hire new? And I do think also some of the airlines will, maybe make a shift in some of their personnel when it comes to, in other words, let's say they've had somebody that they actually stuck out on leave that maybe has been with the company for, 25 years. There's a lot of bennies that are going on there. There's retirement, things along those lines. Scott, are they better off keeping that person, bringing them back on or offering them an early retirement, letting them go and hiring somebody at half the cost?
Hmm. I think you can hire somebody half the cost. It's always going to be better from a profit standpoint.
I think so, too. And I think that's the other thing you're going to start seeing in some of this as well. I could be wrong. I mean, I am not in charge of the airlines by any stretch of the imagination, so I don't want to make a statement that I'll regret. But I could easily see some of these larger employers where they've had people on furlough or layoffs or as we just frankly said, hey, when we want you back, we'll call you. I could easily see them not calling them back and running ads for new people.
So some of the stuff that I'm looking at, too, though, where I do see some inflationary price pressure sticking with wages.
Okay.
So, like, fuel transportation and dock workers, there we have another group of people that got laid off because of everything that was going on. Well, as all these people have been ordering stuff online and, whatever, now the economy is opening back up and other things are ramping. What they're finding is these dock workers who got laid off went and got other jobs. And now they're trying to get people back, and they can't find people to take those jobs. We're in the fuel transportation industry. And then the other issue is, with fuel transportation, some of the schools that were educating these people on driving these trucks shut down. And so now they're having a hard time getting these guys back. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, they don't have schools to train them at the moment. Mm-hmm. So they're having to pay more for these people that left those jobs before to come back and do those jobs again. So there's probably going to be a shortage into the 4th of July, which is usually when we see peak oil prices in the U.S. because of the summer driving season and vacation. Mm-hmm. There's probably going to be, forget about Chesapeake Pipeline, just the transportation industry is going to have a hard time getting all the fuel to all the spots to meet demand for summer driving.
All right. And so Mike?
That tells me, sorry?
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I'm just saying, so that tells me, and this is one of the reasons why I like energy stocks a lot, is that's going to keep oil prices
up.
And that's,
yes.
That'll be good for energy companies.
Sure will.
The majors like that.
No, you're correct on that.
So go energy if you're going to. My concern is, people are not, going to work. They're getting paid basically to stay home because they're on unemployment or whatever. And then I'm also noticing that businesses out there are offering so much more than they normally would for an hourly wage. And I think there comes a point where they can no longer offer that much to get people to come to work. So then that kind of wipes out the small business owner, because a small business owner can only, pay so much in hourly wage in order for them to make any kind of profit whatsoever. So then this again kind of gives more power and, more authority to the big box stores like Walmart, Amazon, because they can afford to pay more hourly in an hourly wage, but the small business owner, they can't. So that's what I'm starting to happen now.
That is a very real possibility. The only way that works is if you're able to. So this is the other side of inflation. Again, on that's the producer price side, and then you go to the consumer price side. If they can push those wage increases and the cost increases for, say, cups or coffee beans or ground beef, whatever it is, if they can start pushing those onto the consumer, and the consumer will take that, then you'll see more consumer price inflation. And so that's why I say, this is why. So we've hit sort of the worst point in terms of the comparisons. They get a lot harder. So you naturally think you'll start to see the slow down in terms of the gains and ease off. But if you don't, if it keeps going, then that brings up a whole other conversation for the Federal Reserve in terms of their policy and doing things to tighten. And you bring up another really interesting point, too, is the job openings.
Right.
Right now, job openings in this country are at a record high.
Yeah, they're huge.
Mm-hmm. There are 8.1 million jobs available. Mm. And then so what the Federal Reserve, people worried about policy to loose and when is it going to start to tighten? One of the Federal Reserve speakers, the vice chairman, Richard Clarida, was talking yesterday, and one of the comments he made was, the Fed really wants to, they're worried more about gaining all the jobs back that were lost versus inflation. But one of the comments he made was, if we gain those 8.2 million jobs back that were lost during the pandemic, that makes the Fed start talking about tightening policy. So if you do the math on that and you look at their 8.1 million jobs available, the conversation's getting a lot closer.
Yeah. Hmm. But I mean, the same,
that,
but at the same time, like you, okay, let's say you're paying people twice as much to work for an hourly wage, but then you're looking at inflation and a gallon of gas, I mean, you know, costs, well, you know, $10, yeah. Then it doesn't matter if you're making twice as much you normally would, as, you know, in a minimum wage job.
No, at the end of the day, right. it's a net to the employer, or the employee, I should say, though, Scott. But at the same token, you just created inflation with
right.
all that.
Yes, yes, this is very possible, and I could very much wind up eating my words.
And I heard the last time we. You know, we raised interest rates when we were dealing with inflation was back in the 1970s.
Yeah, Carter.
But at the time, we had, like, what, less than $1 trillion in debt as a nation. It's totally different now. What are we, $28 trillion?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, Scott. Talk about that for a moment, because a lot of folks are trying to compare what we have going on today to the 70s. And while there is some comparisons, it is not exactly the same. And again, I hope I don't eat my words here. I don't anticipate 18% interest rates like we had back in the 70s. Could they tick up? Yeah, but I don't see them going to 18%. Are we in a different world today, and what are your thoughts along those lines?
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I think we are is what we're looking at today versus then is there is a much more coordinated global central bank policy. So the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada, European Central Bank, they're all acting in unison. And basically, the Fed is the big anchor there for the rest of the world. I mean,
right.
They've all come out and said if the Federal Reserve didn't do what it had done, the global economy would have fallen apart. And they basically salvaged the global economy.
Okay.
So what you're looking at, though, is now like the European Central Bank is saying, well, you know, not so fast on pulling back on any sort of stimulus. We probably need to do more. And this is another thing I look at from a central bank standpoint. And currency is like, well, Europe is leading in terms of the recovery. So is Japan. So if those guys do more, that's going to put pressure on their currencies. And that's downward pressure, I should say. And that's going to put upward pressure on the dollar. So if you see the dollar's value kick up just from things like that, that becomes disinflationary because a stronger dollar is able to buy more.
I agree with that.
And so we'll see how that plays out. Now, yeah, I don't think we're going to see rampant inflation like we did in the 70s. Again, I could be wrong. I mean, I remember.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
I really do. I hope you're right.
I was born in 71, so you can figure out how old I'm about to turn. But my dad was in the construction business, and he built homes. And, you know, by the time, like, 1979 rolled around, it was tough.
Yeah.
And it was. I remember it was the first time I'd ever heard that phrase, feast or famine,
right.
About business, and my mom was referring to, you know, how tough the construction business could be. And I think by 81 we got to 21% interest rates.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I bought a house in 86, and they'd come down a little bit by then. But my first home I bought, 30-year mortgage, was 9.75%, and that was a good rate.
Yeah, I'd be in that.
That was a great rate. I'm not joking. That was a fabulous rate at that point in time.
I bought a house in 2004 for 5 7/8, and people were telling me that it's historical levels. You're crazy if you don't. Yeah.
What are we at?
Well, right now we're spoiled. I mean, I will say.
I don't even know. What are we at?
Oh, you can do a 30-year around 3% or so.
3%.
Yeah. Yeah. 2 7/8 around.
Yeah, we're spoiled.
Exactly.
We've been spoiled for a while, actually.
Mm-hmm. So but what you were asking earlier, what you guys were asking, so this is a really interesting dynamic, though, of if the Federal Reserve decides to tighten policy and what we've done in terms of all the borrowing that we've seen.
Right.
It becomes a lot harder to service your debt if rates start going up.
Correct.
Right.
And it becomes a lot more expensive for the government to start servicing debt if rates go up.
Right.
Because they have a lot bigger bill to pay.
Yeah, they have a lot bigger bill to pay than you and I. Let's just say that. So that, you know, that's a great question, or a great thought, I guess I should say, and one that I've thought of many times. Is partly why I think we've kept rates down as much as we have, is because as they inch up, you and I both know, it really cuts into the federal budget and what they've got, you know, as far as money to spend in other areas, no matter what it is, whether it's in hard infrastructure or what I call this fluff infrastructure. Either way, there's less of that to go around if we start making bigger interest payments. Am I right?
Yes, completely. Because, yeah, it's just like any business out there, though the government doesn't run like any business out there. But the idea being is that, yeah, when your rates go up, you know, you're borrowing at higher rates, you have to put more money towards servicing that debt than you could before, so you have less money to put out for other things.
Right. The question is, will that keep rates in check, or if inflation really does start to raise its ugly head, do they then have to, because they're forced to, you know, start chunking away at rate increases?
Well, could we even pay that, though?
You print more money to pay it, that's what they do. It's a vicious cycle. That's how a lot of countries get into trouble.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Right, Scott?
Yeah, that is exactly right. That's exactly what would be the problem. That's why you want to be careful that that doesn't happen, because that could get really ugly really quickly. So I think what you'll first start to see, the Fed will take probably years before they raise rates.
Okay.
What they'll start doing first is something called tapering asset purchases. They currently buy about $100 worth of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities every month.
$120 billion, right?
Yes, $120 billion, which is it's hard to believe, a lot of money every month.
Yeah.
And we have seen since the pandemic started, the Fed's balance sheet is going from $4 trillion to basically $8 trillion in 14 months. That's, you know, it was before the financial crisis started, it was at $800 billion and went to $4.3 trillion, I believe is the number at the top. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that took years, and we've done this in 14 months.
Right.
So that is sort of a scary thing. So when you see the Fed start to taper those purchases, that would be their first move toward tightening. The last time they did this in 2013, it took them 2 years before they did their first rate hike. So once you hear about that, and I think you could hear talk about this toward the end of this year, that's when you would look for, okay, that's a signal that in 2 years we could see our first rate hike.
Okay.
Just
to explain to folks listening, because I'm not sure everybody fully understands how it works on the Fed side.
Yeah.
The reason their balance sheet numbers went up is because of us borrowing money from them. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, it's right. So they're buying treasuries, more or less. That's right. So whenever the government issues a bond, they're stepping in and buying, and then we have to pay the Fed.
And we're borrowing it from the Federal Reserve at that point.
But the Fed is also doing that because the Federal Reserve wants to keep interest rates down.
Correct.
They don't want interest rates to go negative, because then at that point, if they're negative, people are paying the Federal Reserve to keep their money in the bank, more or less.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
We don't want that.
Yeah. No, we don't.
No.
So that's when people start to
go to the bank and try to take their money out.
Right.
That's when it gets nuts.
Right, you get a bank run, and that's, well, Europe is dealing with that.
Oh, gosh.
You're seeing some of these big banks in Europe are starting to turn around, and they're going after their customers saying, hey, if you're going to keep your money here, you're going to have to start paying us. And that's why money in Europe is going into the stock market there, because, like, well, why do I want to keep it?
Can't put in a savings account. That's right.
Yeah, I can get a return in the stock market, or cross my fingers. You don't want that. So what the Fed does, instead of taking rates to zero, what they've done is they expand the balance sheet. And by buying bonds and keeping the price up, that keeps the yield down. And so that's what interest rates are, and keeps that low. Now, the problem is when you start to withdraw that buying power, then that's what that's saying is that you're going to let rates start to creep back up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, that's actually good for financial institutions, because that means they can make more money on what they're lending to people.
Right.
Now, I'll throw something out here to you guys that is, this is one thing that I really think about, and this is something that it's an interesting dynamic that's going on. That what we're getting to this point where all these countries in the world, their debt-to-GDP ratios are getting crazy. Japan's over 200%. China won't give you a real number, but there are a lot of estimates that put China over 300%.
Wow.
The U.S. is around 110, 112, I believe. You know, like Italy's 124. So at some point, basically these countries and their governments, if they keep doing all this borrowing, they're going to get to a point of no return. Like, they'll never be able to pay off their debt.
Right.
So what you could actually wind up with situation down the road where you could see a form of hyperinflation where these financial ministers, governments, and the bank chiefs will just get together, and what they could actually do, they could hit the reset button, and they would wipe out all of their debt at the same time.
Isn't that the goal, though? Don't you think that's what they're aiming to do, and then go on some kind of one world global currency?
I don't know if that's their aim, but
I mean,
think
that's what the World Economic Forum is proposing. They've been saying this for a while, and conspiracy theorists were called crazy for saying that this would happen, and it looks like we're heading in that direction.
Yes, they are backing themselves into a corner where they have no choice. And so, you know, this is another reason why, like, when people talk about portfolio diversification, these are reasons why you want to own things that are stores of value and currency, because something like gold or silver, because if you see a massive print of dollars or euros or yen, that's going to drive the value of hard assets like that way up.
Right.
And so by investing in things like that, it doesn't mean you go out and put all your money into it, but you're protecting yourself and your posterity for your future.
Right. All right, we've got to run, Scott. Well, how do folks find you, sir?
Yeah, StansberryInvestor.com. Come check out our free stuff, our paid stuff. We're there to help the little guy.
You're it. Scott, thanks. I always appreciate it. Thanks, sir.
Thanks for your time.
Have a great night. Talk to you next Thursday again. Flesh and Beck is up next. Kevin Flesh, anything you need legally speaking, give Kevin a call today, 303-806-8886.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
Novus Auto Glass. Anything you need when it comes to windshield repair, replacement, don't forget you can get those stickers that you can see through, protect the pit, make the repair easier. And I advise you get some of those. You can go to the KLZRadio.com website, actually fill out the form. We'll send you some of those, or find a location near you by going to rushtoreason.com/Novus. That's N-O-V-U-S.
As the inventor of windshield repair, Novus Auto Glass saves you money by repairing chips and cracks whenever possible. With their patented glass repair technology, Novus can tackle tougher cracks than the competition. In some cases, they can repair cracks up to a foot long, but you have a much better chance at a repair by acting fast. Something as simple as going through a car wash could make your little chip or crack irreparable. For KLZ listeners only, Novus will send you a packet of protective windshield stickers for free. Little pieces of specially designed tape to cover any chips or cracks as soon as they appear, like a bandage for your glass. Request your free windshield patches now at klzradio.com/glass. No matter what sort of damage you're dealing with, there's never any risk with a Novus repair. Should your windshield repair fail, they will credit the cost toward a replacement. klzradio.com/glass.
All right, we just got done talking about finances and the future of. Talk to Al today. He'll get you dialed in on where to head in your financial future. And as I say always, if you haven't heard from your advisor in a while, give Al a call. Go to klzradio.com or 303-744-1128.
These three factors will determine the size of your nest egg in retirement: how much you set aside, what sort of return you get on that money, and the age you start saving. Now, you can't turn back the clock and start saving for retirement sooner, but you can start planning right now, whether you're 46 or 66. Ask Al Smith of Golden Eagle Financial how to create a new tax-free income in retirement so you can make your money last. You've already done the heavy lifting by contributing to your 401k or IRA all these years. Now it would be wise to have another separate investment account funded with after-tax dollars so that in the event of a financial emergency, you don't need to borrow or extract funds that are earmarked for retirement. We have no idea what will happen to the tax code in the future, so make certain a portion of your assets will continue to grow tax-free and generate tax-free income in the future. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/money to set up a free consultation with Al Smith. Advisory services offered through Foundation Investment Advisors, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Rachel, thanks as always. Conservative
awesome.
Mama.
Love it.
All right,
thanks,
enjoy the
Tom.
Rest of your evening. If you missed the first hour, catch it next. It'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget the rom-com movie we'll be reviewing, Finding You, plus movie rental reviews, and it's movies from the 70s in honor of kind of where we're at right now. So don't go anywhere. Listen up. The first hour is next. We'll see you tomorrow. Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.